is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Extended absence. Welcome in to a brand new but very abbreviated week of Sabres Live. Should I start with the question, Marty? What day is it?
Yeah, it's hump day. What day is it, Mike? Is it Mike? What day is it, Mike? Duffer, yeah. It is hump day, but it's a beautiful day. Sunny in downtown Buffalo and in most parts of Western New York. So it's a great way to start a short week for us again.
Have you done anything of significance since the last time I saw you on Thursday?
I got a haircut yesterday, so you're getting to see a fresh new haircut, along with cutting the grass. So that was me and the yard got a haircut yesterday. That was great. Anything of significance, I ordered some new tires for my truck because Plowmaster 43 has got some bare rubber is going on right now, so that needs to happen. And so that's pretty much it. What about you?
Oh, you know, glutton for punishment.
Oh, no. Concerts?
What do you think I did?
Yeah, I was going to say music.
Mm-mm.
No?
Not well enough for that. I rewatched the end of Game 7.
Oh, no. Why would you do that? It's over.
Make sure I didn't miss anything. It's over. It's never over. Marty, I get more agitated by the day as time goes on here into the summer that they didn't win this series.
Oh, yeah.
And because of the banner in our studio, I thought you would get a kick out of this.
Because they won the draw? Because
they didn't just win the draw, Marty.
Yeah.
In the 30 seconds that preceded the overtime loss, they won three consecutive offensive zone faceoffs, only to lose the game. All the wins by Josh Norris. So anybody that's really mildly, moderately, extremely impressed by an increase in faceoff winning percentage can park it for the remainder of time.
Well, I mean, if they had scored, they would have been like, oh, well, they won the faceoff, so that's why they scored. I get that, right? It's like Montreal in game three against Carolina. Suzuki gets a breakaway, and then Madison hits the crossbar. And you're saying, you only had two shots in the last 35 minutes of the game, but you know what? If they score those, Marty Sandwich says, you know what? We don't need 25, 30 shots. We only need 12 or 13. That's what it is. You know what's funny? Is because the series ended last week, last Monday, so we've been a week and a half already, and then there was the holiday weekend, and the weather's turning, and, you know, so I was watching last night's game between Colorado and Vegas, and even my youngest is like, oh, like, who's playing right now? And I'm like, that's the conference final, because in her head, the Sabres season ended, and it's like the rest of the league is done. And I feel like there's a lot of people around Buffalo that are feeling that way. Like, you had such a great season, a great push, beat Boston, game seven against Montreal, overtime. And when that dagger came down and Alex Newhook's game-winning goal in overtime, it felt like, okay, you pull all the wire, like, all at once, and you're like, I'm done with the season, right? So, but we're here to tell you what happened over the weekend if you did not watch any hockey.
4-2, 3-1, 5-3, 2-1. Those are the four scores of the Vegas Golden Knights, who advanced to the Stanley Cup Final, ousting the previously best NHL team this year, the President's Trophy winners, the Colorado Avalanche. Vegas is now the fifth team to reach a Stanley Cup Final with fewer than 40 wins in the regular season. Can you name the four other teams? If you want, I will give you the years.
Okay, give me the year.
02.
02, Carolina?
Carolina, 99.
02 Carolina, by the way, was Arthur Cirbe. They ended up losing to Detroit. 99
part of the trivia
would be Buffalo.
99 would be Buffalo.
Yes.
97.
97, that would be, I don't know about that one.
You don't?
Wait a second.
It's actually a trick question.
96 was Colorado that won against Florida.
Right, but they had a gazillion points. 97 was Detroit when they finally won. And it's crazy because they, of course, had a dynasty, not a, you know, a dynasty, relatively speaking.
Yes.
I mean, they had 20 years of domination. The fact that when they finally broke through and won that first cup, they didn't have 40 wins was amazing.
Because so that was against Philadelphia in 97, right? The Legion of
correct.
Doom?
And okay. The other one was 93.
I was going to say Montreal in 93 would have been
not Montreal.
L.A.?
L.A., obviously.
L.A., I would have thought 93 because that was an unexpected, like, kind of finals, having L.A. and Montreal, because there was other teams that were so good in 93 that did not make it there. But Vegas, look, John Tortorella and the Vegas Golden Knights have been a perfect match in the way that they play. And if you have to ever question what wins in the playoffs and what wins maybe championships we'll see with Vegas, it's defensive structure and defensive responsibility and awareness. Like even when Colorado took a 3-0 lead in game three, Vegas said, the only way we're getting back in the game is by not opening up the game, is by not giving Colorado another goal, by locking it down defensively, and you end up giving three or less in every game to Colorado, which averaged over 4 goals a game in the first 2 rounds of the playoffs. That's what Colorado was not able to do. Yes, McCarr was banged up. Yes, McKinnon was banged up. But I think that the defensive structure of Vegas and Tortorella's like ability to do that really made a big difference.
Agreed, but it's never just one thing.
No, you're right.
And they have the 3 top goal scorers in the playoffs in Howden, Dorofy, and Marner. They have the points leader in Marner and the second in points, but probably, my opinion, the best overall player in Eichel. They've had consistent goaltending in Hart. They've had every meaningful contributor in recent years and this year become even more meaningful now, if that's possible. And it is possible because they meandered their way through a disappointing regular season, yet still won the division title.
Mm-hmm. Pillow fighting division, by the way.
Allegedly. Well, guess what? It paid off. There are many numbers that are staggering with Vegas. Minuscule number of wins this year against teams that actually made the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Like it's below 15. I think it was 12 or something. It's absurd that they could have so few wins against good teams. And I still don't know how important coaching is, but I will say this, for all the things that I don't love about Tortorella, I think he has been doing behind the bench what he has said that he would do from the first week he took over.
Yeah.
And that is enable these players to be their best by essentially getting out of the way. They know their pedigree. They know what they're capable of. I'm just here to remind them. And when I look at some of his in-game reactions, he looks like someone that is taking a breath, taking a step back, and handling things that way. And you can't possibly know everything else that he does beyond those moments that you see in arena and on camera. But it really has been a perfect fit, as you said minutes ago.
Listen to the quotes. Like, Torts called himself and his coaching staff guidance counselors. He didn't say we're coaching him. He said we're basically perfect. Guidance counselor at this point. Mark Stone after the game. You know, what has Torts done when talking to Emily Kaplan of ESPN? And he goes, he's just given us the belief. He's just given us the belief. And I think that's like Rod Brind'Amour with Carolina saying after game one, we didn't need to go and practice, but we practiced. They did video, and he made them believe that if they play a certain way, they'll get there. And it's building on the
They could still be down
3-0
real easily, though.
Yeah, exactly. you know, but that's what Torts has done. Now, a lot of people have pointed out this is a sweep of Vegas on Colorado, a really good Colorado team that was breaking records to start the season in their pace, right? And very, very similar to Columbus beating Tampa Bay, sweeping Tampa Bay in the playoffs the 1 year, where Tampa had the most wins in the season before Boston, I think, got past that. But who was the coach of Columbus then? That was Torts, right? And yes, they had a really good goalie in Sergei Bobrovsky, who made one big save down 3-0 in game one, and they came back that year with Columbus. Bobrovsky was with
Columbus.
with Columbus. Yeah. So now they got Carter Hart, who's played really good. And when you look at the first couple of games of the series, Carter Hart had a huge impact on how Vegas was feeling like, hey, we're getting a goalie making saves here. Let's just continue to play our game. We'll be fine. And he just seemed to get better.
Yeah, and obviously the Vegas way is the Vegas way. And that is also one of the biggest things that has allowed them to reach the finals yet again. Third time in 9 years. They do things their way. They don't care. And they're a model franchise, quite honestly, because
they don't let their old coach talk to other teams. They have guys on long-term IR. They just trade their picks and their prospects. That's the Vegas way.
The Vegas way is they try to win every year. Yeah. That's the way. And that should be applauded. And you can hate them while applauding them. I think that's probably the most simple way to look at this.
You can't hate winners. You can.
Yeah, and they've done it enough
there's
ways.
There's a jealousy maybe aspect to it, but when you go to like three finals in 9 years, and when Bill Foley took that organization and he said playoffs in 3 years, Stanley Cup in five, he was not joking. He's like, that is what I'm setting out to do. Well, he had playoffs and Stanley Cup final in the first year, and now 3-9.
But it leads us perfectly into our Twitter poll question here at Sabres Live today. And sorry for delaying a couple of minutes to get to it, because obviously it's the priority today and every day. What is your top off-season priority? Sign Alex Tuch, trade for a top six forward, address goaltending or other. And Marty, like this, now's the time. Tomorrow's going to be the time. Every day this summer is going to be the time to talk about this. And I honestly can't wait for the responses.
Well, I mean, Alyssa here says, let the kids develop while not trading them off or signing Tuch, right? That's the big thing. Like, I think that there's that. Steve is that, you know, not sure why there is such a push to upgrade goaltenders. Sabres had the third best save percentage in the NHL. A goalie is important, but the guys playing in front of him is even more important. So I think that's because of the Hellebuck chatter that maybe there would be like a connection there. I don't see that right there. And then, you know, the very next comment is Jack. He says, get a number one goalie. Like it's funny because when fans like, I don't understand the goalie conversation, the other person says, we got to get a number one goalie. So I think there's a lot, obviously, on Jarmo Kekalainen's table, desk, whatever, to-do list right now. And if that was me right now, out of these three options, I think I would consider saying address goaltending, but it would be a bigger picture. Obviously, my area of expertise is not just looking at who's your number one guy? How do you move forward? You know, three goalies. You have the Devon Levi kind of situation. Apparently, there is teams that are interested in Devon Levi. So maybe there's a way of making a move in the summertime that includes a Levi, maybe includes something else to go and get an asset that you need. I think, and this is going to sound weird, because Tage Thompson had another 40-goal season and, you know, has played center most of the season. But I think getting a number one center and thinking that you can have a Norris or McLeod behind them, a Hellenius or Oslin on the third line, like, I think that, and maybe Thompson is moved to the wing because you have somebody in the middle of the ice that's going to be just a stud for him to play with, and that puts Thompson to 50 goals. Like, I almost want to say other and number one center would be, like, this morning where I would go with that conversation.
I've heard rumblings that tomorrow's Twitter poll will be name your four centermen.
Yes. There's so many centermen that could fill your top four centers, but yes,
I have Yuri as the number one center. Right,
okay,
now.
So there's a conversation. How did you fit Yuri Kulik in this whole conversation?
Like, but again, this whole Vegas thing ties in perfectly because you're sitting there having a difficult time looking at three plus options, and if you had said to Vegas after winning the cup and then eventually signing Adin Hill, why would you go get another goalie? Why? Yeah. And Carter Hart is now the guy that's running the table and will lead them to, presumably, a second Stanley Cup win in 9 years. It's I love
Mitch Marner was a center all year, and now he's playing the wing. And Mitch Marner is a better winger.
Out of necessity, yes. Yeah,
it was out of necessity.
Because Carlson wasn't there, but yeah.
But you can see how Mitch Marner as a winger is much better, and now it's like that the whole conversation is, well, yeah. Where do you build? Do you build down the middle? Do you build your duos? Who are your duos that you're putting on their top line, second line, third line? Well, how do you fill it in? This year we had Thompson Tuck as a duo, Krebs there. Could it be somebody else with Thompson as a
duo? Is the duo done?
Is the duo done? Yeah, because... like,
is it, in your opinion?
In my opinion, look, over the last 5 days, there has been a lot of rumors and rumbling as to what is Alex Tuck and his camp kind of looking at. What could you do? There was a rumor that was saying Alex Tuck's side of things are looking at 11+. I'm like, the Sabres have $12 million under the cap. They have a priority in Zach Benson. They will have to move some parts out, and those parts may be parts that were very important this year. But you know you can backfill those parts with Ute, with Kulik, Oslin, Hellenius. You know, you've got players that can fit into those parts. But I just don't see how anywhere above 9, 9.5 is going to be feasible for the Sabres to look at moving forward with Alex Tuck. I just don't.
Okay. Even if he gets 8.
Yes, it still puts you in a really
even if he gets 8, they are moving out at least 2 main forwards.
Yes.
At
and
least.
We say main forwards is $4 million plus.
It would be McLeod and Greenway at minimum. Otherwise, to me, the only way you have Tuck on this team, Norris is not a part of the team.
Exactly. You got to lose that $7+ million somewhere.
So, like this, again, fascinating discussion. Team building is different from organization to organization to organization. You've finally got yourself in a position where you've seen players in meaningful games, and you have a better but never perfect way of evaluating how these pieces fit.
Tuck to remain? Yes, I would want Tuck to remain. I think Tuck's a big part of this organization.
of course.
Great guy, family here.
Yes.
I've known him from the time he was in Vegas. I think he'd be fantastic for the future of this team. But that's when, you know, the players will say that. It's a business. It's a business. I'm a free agent. It's a business.
Yeah.
Well, there's a part of it that the team have to also consider this a business. Now, Duffer, I want to also make sure I educate the fans on something that maybe was a little bit gray the last...
Did I screw it up?
No, I screwed it up in a way, but I was given information from, you know, everything that was happening with the new CBA that, you know what, like, it used to be 8 years was the max for the teams that the players that you keep and sign, and 7 years on the free agents from other teams that you acquire. This will go down to 7 years for your own players and 6 for players from other, but it won't go to that until September 16th when the new CBA kicks in. So, like for Alex Tuck, he'd still be able to get 7 years on July 1 from another team, not 6 as a max. And the other thing, too, which involves Zach Benson or Bo Byram to a certain extent, is those guys on July 1, well, Benson can sign any time, but Byram on July 1 can sign an extension. Until September 16th, he would be allowed to sign an 8-year extension because that CBA doesn't kick in until that middle of September. So that's where, like, I think there's a maybe a July 1 deadline on Benson because July 1 he becomes a RFA and a team could offer sheet Zach Benson. But there's also a September 16 deadline because that would be the last time that he would be able to get an 8-year deal from the Buffalo Sabres.
You know how we, as humans, often like to say that everything is cyclical?
Yes.
Like it comes around, right? Now, granted, we've never seen a 14-year drought in the NHL, so it's a little different here. But what did we celebrate and draw comparison to most often throughout this surprising Sabre season?
the old 506 20 years reunion.
And what are you feeling now? This feels just like 0506 into 0607. And this was in the infancy of the salary cap.
Yeah.
And that's why Tampa didn't do much coming out of the 04 win before losing a season, because there was no precedence for it. Mm-hmm. Jay Feaster was put in an unmanageable, almost unwinnable situation.
Yes.
Because nobody had ever had to deal with winning a cup and then figuring out how to make it all fit.
And then overpaying for the players that won the cup.
And I dare say the Sabres were in a similar position, because few other teams within the first 2 years back in the salary cap era had as much regular season success without winning the whole darn thing. And when you have these really good to great seasons, it makes it super challenging to keep your team together. And that's why this question today at Sabres Live, and every question we ask moving forward, is going to be relevant, because you're going to have to part with key pieces. And sometimes you don't even know how key those pieces are. Like a Dumont that goes on to Nashville, right?
McKee went to St. Louis. I think that's the thing. We talk about Tuck and McLeod and Greenway and whatever, and maybe Tuck doesn't sign. Maybe he does. Maybe you got to move McLeod or Greenway because you have to open the door for young players. Now yep. I got, you know, a little bit of maybe nightmares looking back at, okay, well, a J.P. Dumont moved on, right? Because you're like, well, we have a Roy and a Pominville, and we have young players, Vanek coming in, and McKee moves on because, oh, well, you have a Brian Campbell, and you have all of that. And then the year after that, Drury and Briere moved on, and I'm like, the dominoes had started in 05-06, and then they kept going after 06-07, and that was a mistake. You look back, and you're like, ooh, doing the transition into younger players, maybe, but that's why I say you have to be careful. But I do feel we have 20 years of experience when it comes to handling the cap now, that yes. saying, okay, 10, 11 million for Tuck, when you have to re-sign a Benson and you mm-hmm. potentially have to give Bo Byram an extension that would kick in a year from now, like a lot of people are saying right now, like Sabres, you know, says sign Zachary Benson. Randall says Benny and Bo, they're the, you know, priority. James says extend Byram and Benson for as long as possible. Now, I feel like a lot of the fan base is focusing on Benny and Bo right now as your priority moving forward. Not as much looking at Alex Tuck. Not as much looking at other things. It's those are the priorities moving forward.
And what is completely different than 20 years ago is, even though you've now reached success, perhaps quicker, and success is in quotations, quicker than what you anticipated, mm-hmm. you have a huge part of your core already locked up, and in yes. some cases on value deals. So that changes the equation from 06-07, but it doesn't change the urgency to sign the right people right now and moving forward. So I love it. I mean, we had a lot of time off here, and I couldn't be more excited to be talking about all this stuff. I really can't. Like it, and not to put a downer on it, but if you were ever thinking that we were downgrading July 1st and free agency in recent weeks and months.
Yeah.
One of the best potential UFAs went off the board yesterday in Evgeny Malkin.
Yeah. Nice contract for Pittsburgh in the Malkin camp.
It's great. They're you know, it's $5.5 million. Like Evgeny at 39.
It's probably going to be $7.5 million when it's all said and done, because he has $2 million of attainable right. bonuses. But even at 7.5, if Malkin gets in the playoffs and play like he does this year, you're getting yeah. a player at 7.5 that probably should be 10.
Yeah, and he was top 25 in the NHL last year in points per game, mm-hmm. tied with Sidney Crosby, yep. right behind Jack Hughes. You know what I mean? Like, there's value for Pittsburgh, and there's not much value, my opinion, now, to be had wonder, on July 1st this year.
And for the people that don't know much about contracts, the reason why Evgeny Malkin is able to get bonuses, the bonuses only count for entry-level deals and 35 and over contracts that are on a one-year deal. Now, there is also a bonus or available to players that missed a year due to injury, come back and sign a one-year deal. So you go low base with extensive, like bonuses. But Evgeny Malkin signed a one-year deal at 35 and over. So there could be bonuses when it comes to making the playoffs, playing a certain amount of games, like points or whatever. So that's why he's able to get bonuses. If people were like, oh, give Alex Tuck 7 million base and 3 million, 4 million bonuses. No, Tuck can't do that. Number one, he's not 35 and over, and that would only be on a one-year deal.
Right, and there's a lot in the way of reaction to our Sabres Live poll today, so we will keep responding to that as we continue. We'll have Dazzled and Disturbed as well, and as you know, it is game four of the Eastern Conference Final tonight. Carolina leads the series 2-1 over Montreal. Back after this on Sabres Live.
Get back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome back. Off-season priority. That's what we're asking of you at Sabres Live on this day as we return to the airwaves.
A lot of meat on that bone, Duffer. A lot of meat on that bone.
Yes, it's not only an abbreviated week for us, it's a little bit upside down as well. We're going to have Shayna Goldman tomorrow.
Yep.
Darren Dreger on Friday. So that's a slight reversal from the norm, correct?
It is correct. Usually it's Thursday with Dregs and Friday with Shayna. But we're doing a little bit of back and forth, and that's good. I think Dregs is at the Memorial Cup right now in Kelowna, British Columbia. So maybe Friday's a travel day and can't do it. So anyway, we're going to get Dregs tomorrow. Actually, Shayna tomorrow and Dregs on Friday.
You want to run us through what we're seeing at Sabres Live as it pertains to our off-season priorities for the Sabres? This is, it's incredibly interesting. I don't think it's surprising, but not a lot of people are, you know, focused on re-signing Alex Tuck at the moment. And I think that's simply a reality check, right?
I think it's people realizing that there's not a lot of cap space. And, I mean, we had Jonathan even asking, like, could Tuck sign a one-year deal and then get a long-term deal the next year because the cap will go up and maybe you got more money for Tuck then? That's not happening. That's wishful thinking, saying, hey, let's work this. We'll give you a one-year deal now. And on January 1st, we're going to have this envelope coming out of the bottom drawer, and we already have a contract figured out. Now, Alex Tuck has an opportunity to get either an 8-year deal, potentially for the Sabres, a 7-year deal on July 1 from another team. He's going to look to get that. Now, it's kind of interesting because the, you know, re-signing Benson and Byram was not on our, like, poll questions. It's Tuck. It's straight for top six forward, which is kind of where I was going with a number one center, address goaltending, or other. And a lot of people have replied, Benson and Byram as the priorities. So, you know, producer Sam has been asking people, okay, well, you mentioned Benson and Byram. What are you thinking for money, right? So Jose here is saying, I'm thinking 7x7 for Byram, 5x6.5 if he would do shorter term, but that would be less money. I don't think 7.5 is going to do it. I really don't think $7 million is going to do it for Bo Byram. I think we're looking probably around $9 million on a long-term deal for Bo Byram. Once again, he's had a fantastic season. He looked really good in the playoffs. He took a short-term deal to bet on himself. He's not taking another short-term deal. He's going to max, and he's trying to maximize the value. I think you got to go probably $9 million, but Jose's saying like 7x7 for Byron would be what he would say.
Well, what about Benson in your opinion?
Benson for me is going to be tricky just because I think there's a lot of upside, and we saw it especially in playoffs, but you know, when he was given that opportunity to have that game-changing attitude and responsibilities, he's able to do it. He had a lot of points, providing some offense. Ray Ferraro said on this show, he thinks 25 goals, 70 points is where Benson's going to be. Let me tell you, 25 goals and 70 points in 2 years from now will be worth $10-plus million, right? I mean, that's just the way. Look at the cap going to 113.5. You know, it's going to be a lot. So Mark says 7 years, $9 million for Benson. I don't think it goes up to that much money. I think for Benson right now, we're probably talking around the $7 million. I would have a hard time saying, hey, you're going to make more than Tage Thompson. You're going to make more than Josh Norris. But I get those guys sign in a different era of the cap and a flat cap and all of it. But I think staying at 6.8, 6.9, 7 million for Benson on a long-term deal, I think you'd be getting that.
Who do you think Benson's playing with next year to start the year?
Oh, I mean, I
you don't
really
have
like
to answer right now. I mean, that's probably a topic for another day. We should probably stay with off-season priorities. So
yeah, but I'll tell you this. The duo, you know, when we talk about duos, I think Benson and Doan duo was great. And then Benson and Norris duo was great as well. Like, I mean, there's options there for the Sabres too. Benson with anybody worked this year.
Okay, so what we saw at the end was Benson with Norris and Thompson. Granted, it was a small sample, and we don't know who's going to be back. But let's say if Tuck isn't, then there's a higher probability that Norris does remain a Sabre.
Yep.
Do you think if they ran it back with Benson, Norris, and Thompson, that Norris at some point would come close to his previous goal-scoring numbers in his career?
I want to say yes, because I think that what Josh Norris is going to do this summer is evaluate a season and kind of see, like, where could he make ground? I think he was a big part of the success of this team. Getting hurt in game one and missing 24 games and coming back late November, it coincides with everything that the Sabres were able to do on the positive side, right? Even him and Benson playing with Thompson in game six and providing the offense that the Sabres needed in game six in Montreal and some of the chances they had in game seven, you're looking at, okay, Norris has a lot of upside, but the goal scoring was not there. Goal scoring, like we know he can do, was not there. Even when we talked to him this year, and I see Norris more as a playmaker, and he did. Set between you and I, Duffer, and talked about, I still consider myself more of a goal scorer. And okay, good. Didn't show this year. I think for me, that's probably the biggest part of the game that Josh Norris has to bring back next year, is that goal scoring. Because I think Benson has a lot of playmaking ability. And then if you're looking at playing with a Doan, if you're going to stick Norris, Benson, Doan together again, somebody's got to finish and finish with a very high level. And I think that's got to be Norris. If you don't have Norris finishing, that line's not going to work as a top two line for me. You're going to have to say, okay, well, you put Thompson with Norris and Benson, or you got to move somebody around. If Norris gets back to scoring, then I think we have something that can even be more of a threat offensively than what it is right now.
Yeah, I guess another way to ask the question, and we will do it between now and September, is how do you maximize all of the offensive attributes of Josh Norris? And we'll have endless line combinations to ponder at some point. And I think a lot of people are wondering as well, can you give the Doan contract to Benson?
Yeah.
Which is essentially, for round numbers purposes, 7 times 7. It's 7 times just under 7. But let me also ask it a different way. Does having the Doan contract done help or hinder the Sabres in this process?
I think it helps. I think it helps, because I think that would be the sweet spot, saying in and around Josh Doan's contract. Josh Doan's 24, though, has built, a different career path than Zach Benson. This was the very first year Josh Doan was able to say, I'm an NHL full-time, I have a role, look at what I can do. And we've all seen that, wow, this was a bit of a steal in a J.J. Paterka trade that brought in Kesselring and Doan. And you're like, wow, this is exactly what the Sabres needed up front. And Benson, having been here since he's 18 years old, is a different path. But this was the first year of Benson that we saw him in that threshold of salaries. Last year, if we had that conversation a year ago with Zach Benson, I would have said, Benny will be a good $4 million player, $3.5 million player, like just a guy that I didn't think he was a first line guy. I didn't think he was a top six or top nine guy. I'm like, man, maybe down below bottom six and plays a role. I think what we saw out of Benson, what we saw out of Doan, is exactly those type of numbers.
Yeah, and keep in mind, Benson, despite being 3 years younger, has played 70 more NHL games, roughly, than Doan at this point in time. D&D.
Dazzled and disturbed.
So really, the dazzling for me was the Tomas Hertl goal over the weekend in Game 3, midway in the third. It could have been overtime because that ended up the game-winning goal. But the fact that the Vegas Golden Knights were down 3-0 in Game 3 at home to the Colorado Avalanche after the first period, got it back to 3-3 in the second, and Hertl makes the play inside and out on Malinsky and then gets the back end on Scott Wedgwood for the game-winning goal. That was one of the last nail in that coffin for Colorado, who ended up being swept, but it all is Tomas Hertl and the skills there. I joked, I was doing TSN, that was on, what are we today, we're Wednesday, so that was on Sunday night. I joked that I think Wedgwood was expecting Hertl to go between his legs like he's done once before, and he wasn't expecting the back end there. But that was a power back end and a great move. That was dazzling.
It was one of the best. It was one of the best backhands I've ever seen. There is nothing Wedgwood could have done. It was perfectly placed, and it was stunning. And Hertl has been amazing. Now, there are calls that are disturbing you or non-calls.
Oh, I mean, listen, on Monday night in overtime, Montreal, I mean, there was a few trippings in overtime. Lane Hudson got his legs taken down. Taylor Hall got a slew foot by Mike Madison right there. There was too many men on the ice that should have been called against Montreal that didn't get called. I'm like, What is going on in these playoffs with referees not calling obvious plays? And the too many men on the ice for Montreal, the worst part about it is the linesman blew the whistle, Duffer. Okay? Okay, let's get together. Let's talk about it. Well, why are you blowing the whistle? You're blowing the whistle because it's too many men on the ice. And then they got together and said, no, we're not going to call it. Are you, like, what are you thinking? So, obviously, it worked for Carolina. Carolina won that game. But to me, like, this has been a problem all playoffs long. And maybe, like, we were seeing it in the Buffalo series, obviously, against Boston and against Montreal. Mm-hmm. But to miss a tripping on Carolina, to miss a tripping on Montreal, to miss a too many men on the ice on Montreal in overtime, that is brutal right there. I will say that is a joke right there. There you go.
Well, it's kind of disturbing when you show up to an event on the wrong night, but sometimes it can turn into a dazzling moment. Like, imagine you and I went on date night in Henderson to see AHL hockey, and we had our tickets, but it wasn't that night. Like, I don't know what we would have done, but we would have been in Vegas, so we would have found something to do. Anyway, this couple in Arizona went to the game on Friday. It was not a game they were supposed to go to. They realized their tickets were for the next night. They bought tickets down the left field line. Second inning, Adames hits a home run. Dude catches the ball. This is cool. We're at a game we're not even supposed to be at, and I caught a home run ball.
Yep.
Next night, in the tickets that they originally had purchased, they're in the same area. It's again the second inning. It's again Adames. And the only irony here is the guy is a D-backs fan, not a Giants fan. So he ends up, after a ricochet off the bullpen, catches the ball again. Consecutive nights, same part of the park, same dude catches a home run ball hit by the same player.
In the same inning.
Unbelievable.
In the same inning. It's crazy. And that's sometimes why, like, sports are so fun. Because, I mean, like, remember when we talked to Yuri Kulik about, you know, going to visit his bud in Minnesota and he bought tickets for February instead of December? Like, it happens. You buy tickets for the wrong day or you book a hotel. How many times have you travel a lot, Duffer? You show up to a hotel and you're like, I'm checking in. You're like, that's for tomorrow, but we have rooms available. Like, it happens. It's so easy online. But these people have a story to tell with two home runs, two nights in a row. One was the wrong game they went to. The next one was the right game from the same player.
We have a lot still to get to on Sabres Live. Stay with us. Birthdays, anniversaries, and more. Maybe even worlds. Stay with us.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Incredible matchups at the World Championship quarterfinals tomorrow. Canada, yes. USA in the quarters. Who you got?
I got Canada. They're a better team. But, you know, I'm going to cheer for Donny Granato and the Americans trying to maybe upset Canada in the quarters.
How about Norway or Latvia? Because one of them is going to be in the semis.
Yeah, no, I would love for Latvia to be there. I love Latvia. I love the country. I love their people. Let's go Latvia in the quarters.
This is historic, though, for Norway. What a tournament for them. And they had an overtime loss to Canada. Like, they have been full value for having this opportunity. Okay, let's get to our anniversary. Happy anniversary to Game 3 of the 99 Conference Final. Buffalo with a big win on home ice against Toronto. This was after they lost Game 2, so people were a little nervous because the series was 1-1. You're coming back. You're trying to beat Cujo and the Leafs. You had Hasek in goal, and you got the offense you needed.
Yeah, you got the offense by Miro Chatan after, you know, they were down 1-0 to Toronto. Chatan scored up 2-1 in the second. Stu Barnes will end up getting the game-winning goal on the power play, on the rebound. He gets it through Curtis Joseph. The Sabres would end up winning this game 4-2 to take a 2-1 lead. Dwayne Roloson at one game one, lost game two. So Hasek was back for game three. Now, this game included 140 penalty minutes, including 18 minutes from Ty Domi. As we see here on TV, at the end of the game, he started to kind of rough it up. And Kevin Adams had a 10-minute misconduct as well. Him and Eric Rasmussen were going at it late. Carey Fraser was trying to separate them. I love how Rass has that mean mugging, like, just in the face of Kevin Adams right there. Like, Rass was such a mild guy. He could hit, and he could play. He was a first-round pick for the Sabres, but he's got that mean look, like he's getting in the face of Kevin right there. Yeah. And the Sabres taking a 2-1 lead in this conference finals. They would end up winning it in five and moving on to the finals a few days later.
They won it because Rasmussen had the series-winning goal in Game 5. Happy birthday to Ray Sheppard. He is 60 on this day. He was the 60th pick back in his draft year in 84. He overcame playing with Rob Ray and Cornwall in his final year of junior when he scored 81 times. And incredibly, he was runner-up to Joe Nieuwendyk for the Calder Trophy in 87-88. Ray scored 38 times, but Nieuwendyk scored 51. Nieuwendyk should have broke Bossy's record of 53, but he failed to score in the final eight games of the regular season. Ray Sheppard's career included an Amherst Calder Cup championship in 87, but it was ended in Buffalo in 1990 when Meehan moved him on.
Yep.
How much do you think he was traded for?
Oh.
$1. $1 and future considerations. Ray Sheppard would go on. I'm not kidding. He would go on to score 20 or more with six different teams in the NHL. The trivia question to you, Marty, there are five players in NHL history who have scored 20 or more with six different teams or more. Who are the five?
Six.
And you
different
said
teams.
One of the names off air before the show started.
I said one of the name off here.
Ray name.
Whitney.
Ray Whitney.
Yes.
Ray Whitney did it six times, like scored 20 with six different teams.
Yeah.
Pierre Turgeon also. Doug Gilmore also, but not with Buffalo because that was a disappointment. The only guy to score 20 or more with seven different teams is currently a GM in the Central.
In the Central Division, I don't know.
Billy Guerin.
Oh, yeah, I guess I would have known because you got to play. He played over 800 games, Ray Sheppard, and scored 52 with the Red Wings in the mid-90s. Like, that is pretty incredible.
Yeah, and he was the same consistent scorer in the playoffs as regular season.
The Price
season,
is Right there.
He never won the Stanley Cup. Great show today. We'll do it again tomorrow on Sabres Live.